Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Studio Door. I'm your host, Molly.
I'm the other guy, Christian Rivera.
We're married.
Yeah.
And then we have our producer, Chris, here.
Hello, hello. I've got bitter liquid in my glass, and I'm a happy, happy man.
Happy, yes. Happy man. And I'm a happy, happy human because one of my nearest and dearest is on the show today. Tegan, hi.
Hi. I have such a big smile. My cheeks hurt. I wish it could be seen.
You can hear your smile. Yeah. I can see it, but it's definitely audible.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here.
Fantastic.
Amazing. I'm so excited for you to be here. So let's get right into it with introductions. Mm. Who are you? What do you do?
Who am I and what do I do?
Describe your entire essence.
Yeah. That's very abstract. Yeah. Well, my name is Tegan West or Tegan West. I've be called both forever. And yeah, I feel like the first thing I want to say is like the one role I identify the most with, I guess, is being like a community wrangler in a way, you know, in this ever changing expression of it. You know, there's dance spaces and ceremonial spaces and just all of the ways of gathering folks to be together in how we exist in the human experience and connect to ourselves and each other. And I do a lot of like what I think would be considered healing work, although it's tricky with that word for me. But yeah, all kinds of different healing modalities, predominantly astrology. That's my big like Merlin cave time. Archetypal energy is the astrologer. That's been like over a decade now of real deep practice and body work and Ayurveda and all of these perhaps witchy, what would be considered witching forms of healing, just mm-hmm. making it accessible to folks that maybe wouldn't know it otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to have you on the show because all of the things that you do, I see as inherently creative. Mm-hmm. And you literally named it your community wrangler. And those are like the two big things that we talk about the most on the show is creativity and community and how those things weave together. And so I guess I'm wondering what's alive for you around those right now.
Oh my goodness. I mean, the first thing that is so alive for me recently is this concept of the collective soul, you know, and this concept that we in our individual bodies and in our individual experience, when we come together in group space by whatever form, maybe it's a small group of friends or like a ecstatic dance gathering or like the community, the larger Rochester, right? Like there's a collective body that is formed in those spaces that informs the individual body. And I am really, that's so alive for me is the meeting place of the two, you know, where the individual informs the collective body and vice versa, and how much it forms our experience of consciousness and creativity and like being a receptor for what is alive in both, you know, micro and macro scales.
Yeah, the collective soul idea. Are you talking about? Mm. I mean, I know what you're talking about. I'm playing devil's advocate a little
please,
bit.
Yeah, please go off.
But it's like this like archetypal energy, almost a cultural energy that forms.
Yes.
Is that kind of what you're talking about? Is like when we all collect and gather, there's this attunement that forms.
Yeah.
And really, there's no way to say that that's not abstract because it is inherently esoteric.
Sure.
But it's. In what ways are you starting to explore bridging those two ideas of collective and individual?
Yes. What comes up for me within your question is like, I see these two different scales and I see on the mind level, when groups gather and people come together, there is a collective identity, right? There's shared cultural beliefs. There's a way that we've all agreed to show up in a space, right? Like I'm thinking in some of the ecstatic dance and fire ceremonies, right? This is a space for people to gather and come together and practice their own relationship to spirituality, right? In this agreed upon way, or this relationship to their body. But then you use the word attunement, and I think that's really important because the other layer that is not so intellectual, it's not so conscious and mind-based, is this attunement that's happening on the body level, right? That we are creating a shared energy that is kind of like a pool, right? We call it at dance, we call it the soup, right? And whatever is alive for each individual, whether it's like emotional content or something that just happened or, you know, all of that are the raw ingredients for the soup, right? And it creates a larger body that is shared. We're all a part of that organism, you know? So I think, yeah, that's what comes up for me.
So are you effectively saying that's your art form?
I would say it's a part of it. Okay. I would say the attunement piece is what fascinates me, you know, and really watching the patterns, right? For me, archetypes are patterns in consciousness. And we form our experience of that reality through symbol, through language, through emotion, right? All of these, all of these facets of like tracking that attunement. I think it's really fascinating. So I would consider that an art, a creative practice.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I love that so much. I'd love to know more about how creativity, like, because we actually started bigger, you know, we started talking about like the collective body and how that's woven in like a almost a bigger like macro sense. And I'm wondering how, especially in the last couple of years, you know, like since the pandemic and all of these big shifts that have been happening in the collective body, how has that affected you and your creative practices? And your like process as, because I mean you're an artist in all these other ways, right? Do you identify as that? I don't want to like put word in your mouth.
You know, I thought about that today on my way over. Like, am I an artist? And for me, like the identity of the artist is I mean, I went to art school, right? I was on this path to become a photographer and all this, like very, I would say, artist identity form. And what I've been really perhaps deconstructing and then reconstructing is like how fluid that word is for me now. Mm-hmm. Like actually to be in a body is to be an artist, right? Preach. To be an individual, to be the flute, right?
Yeah.
That inspiration to be breathed into, right? Mm-hmm. In spiritus, to be the receptor for ideas and vision and creative impulse, like that's the artist. We are all, that's birthright. You know, it makes me emotional. It's like, to unpack and really allow every being to belong to that identity creates so much room for us to evolve and grow, you know. And I think to your question about what the past 3 years really, I would say, have really, what I've seen change in my own process is really tethered to that like deconstruction. And I found myself like very much in Merlin's cave during that time, just, you know, having a love affair with esoterica and with astrology and with all of these, you know, perhaps more ancient archetypal ways of understanding the human experience and the great mystery. Right? Like beginning to throw a veil and try to like reveal what's underneath it around the great mystery. And so I saw it actually take me deeper into this very much cave-like process of discovering my own personal mythology, right? That is told through the symbols that resonate for me and what that means for my path here. But also how that again interfaces with like the groups I'm a part of. Ecstatic dance and the group movement space was alive that whole time.
Yeah.
And so I was able to come into this exploration of self also through my body in community, which I think is a really important factor for me. Yeah.
Can we talk about ecstatic dance a little bit more? Because ecstatic dance actually, so for those of you who aren't familiar listening, basically, when it's warm outside, we go into the woods and we have these two giant speakers and we just move our bodies however the fuck they want to move. And then when it's a little colder, we go into like our space at Dutch, you know, our friend Brad owns. And it's really, really great to have this like container where I would say most of the people in that container are some form of creative. Obviously, like, it's our birthright and, like, hell yeah to that. But these people know it.
Yes.
And really are in a communal space, like, you know, moving our bodies together and then seeing what stuff comes up. And so I'm curious about what that's been like for you the past few years, being a community weaver, like kind of facilitating that space. Like we literally were on Zoom dancing together during you know, the pandemic. And I remember seeing what a time. Tried to block it out. But I like remember seeing like half of a person's body on a tiny little screen. And, you know, like we're communing together. And I don't really know what my question is in all of this. I just would love you to talk more about it.
I think I can try to weave a question out of that.
Yeah.
Because it is, first of all, like if you're thinking you listening are going to get grounded, practical, artistic advice out of this episode, you are not. I'm just going to say
that
because it's already activating the excited philosophical parts of my brain, which is great. And it's so much fun. And there's room for that in all of this artistic expression aspect of things. You know, like Molly and I get these questions all the time or these statements when we have, when we've had studio spaces, people come in and they're like, I could never make that kind of art. I'm not a creative person, et cetera, et cetera. And to what you were saying about like this innate creative channeling and expression, that simply it's about like attuning to what is our essence and what we bring and what is our gift, so to speak. You know, most people get in their way because they're so focused on skills and skill development. And skill development comes into it. But in terms of like analytic skills, tools, things like that. And obviously tools come to play, like dance with instruments and you're using speakers and you're playing music and all of that stuff. I'm also losing the question.
It's tools, but it's free form.
I think that's actually exactly what's on my mind in this, is that for me, dance, first and foremost, I mean, I was a ballerina for 20 years, very rigid, very like fit inside this box. And if you don't write the skill, if you don't have the skill, you're no good, right? That is so embedded into me. And so for me, even the aesthetic dance space has been a reclaiming of my body as this creative organism, right? And for me, dance, but also the artistic practice in general, is about getting free. It's about getting free in our experience. It's about actually removing all the layers that tell us we have to be a certain way to do a certain thing, which I could go off about the over-cultural identity on that. But in truth, it's like, how do I, as birthright, get to move and create and have vision in the world, right? Because it's not necessarily like, I remember, Molly, when I went to an ugly art night, that I was so bound up, my arms were so bound up in the doership, right? And so for me, it's like, how do I remove the agenda, remove the outcome, and actually allow myself to be a creative, you know, channel, and let that experience of being a creative channel just totally blast me open, right? And remove the rigidity, remove all these conditions on how or what it means to be an artist or an artistic being. So for me, like the process really that I've come, I'm so grateful for the aesthetic dance space and the wildness of people, the courage of people to be so unhinged and unbound, right? For me, it's like the even the other night, I'm like, these people leave their whatever they're bound up in at the door, and they come in and they allow themselves to be in this primitive animal instinctual nature. And that is one of the most inspiring things I can imagine to witness. And so how do we get free like that? Right? Because we're in enough straitjackets in the world, right?
And I'm curious also how, like, it's letting go of that expectation, the perfectionism, those skills, but also new skills come online. And so I'm curious about the relationship to, I forget what the word was. You said community weaving, was it?
It's wrangling.
It's like herding cats.
I'm trying to tap into emotional language. I don't usually use emotional language.
So
I'm like, weaving? Oh, that sounds emotional. Let's use that one.
It's okay. You can use your thinker language. That's fine.
No, because I would just be like herding cats.
I was going to say, like, three quarters of the words that are going on have never passed my lips.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Great.
Chris went and took a bathroom break.
I went to go grab a camera.
It's delightful and endearing to watch them just go.
Yeah.
And I experience it personally, and it's wonderful.
Sometimes Christian's like, what are you talking about?
I mean, I can keep up a little bit. Yeah. I've had some practice. Yeah. And you give me more practice, and yeah. I appreciate that. But talking about that community weaving, I'm going to use my word now.
Mm-hmm.
Community weaving. Herding mm-hmm. cats, letting go of those perfectionism practices.
Yeah.
How has that led to these new skills? Maybe it's been old skills transmuted or whatever, but now it's like you have this community herding skill. Yes. How does that, totally. How is that coming online for you?
Well, I think it's, you know, especially, I mean, for years, I've been holding this dance space for almost 5 years now. And for years, it was such an edge, mm-hmm. right? It was such an edge to hold the space and come into a group container and move and allow other people to witness me in that, like, unbound, unhinged state.
Mm.
And also then by virtue of, like, me giving myself the permission to be unbound, inviting others to do the same, you know? So for me, the skill that has developed is courage, right? Mm. It's like, actually, it's courage to be wild and to be unbound and to not have to play by the roles that I was existing within, you know? But then there's also the very practical reality that, like, the more time you spend getting to know your body, the more of it comes online, you know, the more opens up. Like, I have more room in my chest than I ever have, right? Mm-hmm. And because of that, I have more room in my heart space to be open to the world of feeling. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't think I would be here right now without that, you know, in terms of my emotional attunement. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, it's really, like, transformed my whole creative practice. Mm-hmm. Like, we've talked about it privately, but learning to yell and, you know, even,
like,
I think, like, vocalizing, like, really letting the animal parts of my body come through has really released this extra, like, it's like it does, it releases this body intelligence and this ability for me to then transfer that to when I'm facilitating things, like you mentioned, like ugly art, where it's like, yeah, I know what this feels like in my body and I know how how to model it for people and I know how to be like, hey, like, let's fuck it up.
Yes,
you know,
totally.
Let's do it. And it's what's beautiful to me about all of that is that really, like, the smuggle is that it's a sovereignty practice. Like,
yes,
you know, it's like, oh, if I can yell in this space with these people and wiggle my body, or I can, like, fuck up a canvas and just let myself be messy, what else can I do?
I mean, we're doing all the things in that space that we're told not to do in normal society, right? Like, out in the world, you wouldn't yell like a lion and then, like, shake and thrash around, right?
Uh-huh.
But, like, for me, you know, it goes into this deeply vital space of somatic awareness, right? And that being able to actually allow your body that spaciousness to, like, get wild and get open and break apart whatever it's all bound up in, right? Which is usually mind stuff. Mm-hmm. We move through the world neck up for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So to have that ritual every weekend of, like, dropping into this wild place, you know, it has cultivated such an ability to listen to my body's wisdom and to move through the world from there, not from the mind, but from instinct and impulse. And that has changed my life, right? Like, that's a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tough one.
Especially in the world we live in.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird.
Yeah. It's strange.
Like, it's like that joke of, like, oh, well, now I'm going to be feral. It's like, but really.
No, I'm always feral, like, now, secretly.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question, you know, because, like, to become unbound, at some point you have to be bound.
Uh-huh.
And there's usually a reason for it. Like, when, you know, if you're a toddler running around naked and you stay that way until you're 22, no one appreciates that. It doesn't work out very well. So there is benefit to having been bound in the first place, but obviously you're talking about eventually letting go of all of that because you've developed your own sovereignty and ethics and gone through life in a way that you can start to trust yourself.
Right.
And so to me, that brings up the question of how that actually does look like in everyday life, especially relative to art practice and things like that, you know, and you're not just, like, you know, running around the streets naked, just making a mess every moment of every day, because there is a civil society we live right. in, and we have to interweave between those things. So yeah. I don't know if that makes sense as a question.
Definitely. Yeah, and two things come up, and the first is that, you know, I think a lot about duality. I'm always thinking about polarity and duality, and that the birthright of physical reality, without going too far out, is a dual nature, right? So I show up and I'm in my holistic healing practice and I'm holding space for another person. I'm not going to scream and yell and be unhinged in that container. But because of the attunement and the deep listening that I have been able to cultivate with my body through this art form of dance, of movement, I am able to sense and feel into their body in this deep, I would say co-regulating way that is not from mind, but is from sensing, feeling, you know, listening. And because of that, there is, you know, I think safety is a personal process, but it's also created together. So perhaps there's a security that's created in the space. But in a way, it's allowed for more attunement overall to, like you were speaking to earlier, to this collective pulse. And I think what it looks like, I mean, it's incredibly mundane, actually, to move through the world with this wild animal that has been awakened inside of my body, right? It's like I am moving through the world from the feeling nature, but it looks incredibly mundane.
Right.
But
like it's a secret.
Yeah, it's the secret, right? It's like the choices that I'm making are actually not over-intellectualized. I'm not getting in my own way from a mind level. Right. I'm able to deeply listen and shift and move according to this impulse of my body, because there are hundreds of neuroreceptors functioning at any given moment in the body. Yeah. And so when I say attunement, there's also a very scientific level of like how much my body is actually always sensing my environment that now I'm deeply connected to. It's integrated, you know?
Yeah, we've had enough conversations to know that this isn't just esoteric
made
up stuff. It's obviously like you're attuning to the body.
Definitely.
And there's all sorts of studies
that
like after we do the break, it'd be interesting to get a little bit of insight into like you know, where that comes up for you and where the conversation goes from there. I don't know if Molly, you had somewhere else you were going.
We can keep going after the break.
Let's just do the break and then we can keep talking with Tegan after this.
I'm Matt Knotts.
And I'm Chris Lindstrom. And we are the co-founders of the Lunchador Podcast Network, your home for amazing and wide-ranging podcasts in Rochester.
With shows like Anomaly Presents, Behind the Glass, the Level Up Coffee Podcast, Punches and Popcorn, Just Can't Not, and of course, Food About Town, we celebrate the people, places, and things that make Rochester a fantastic place to live.
We have more shows joining the network soon and offer remote and in-person recordings and video too. We're excited to bring distinct and diverse voices together on one network.
Follow Lunchador on social media to catch new episodes as soon as they release and stay tuned for exciting news about new shows and how to support them. Lunchador, celebrating Rochester's creativity through the magic of podcasting.
All right, we're coming back from the break. This is producer Chris Lindstrom chiming in. This is not a conversation that is easy for me to jump into because this is a world that is wholly separate from the way I traverse through the world.
Love it. Like, we're making connections.
As like a, it's like completely separate from how I go through the world, how I think about things. I'm trying to really take it in as this is how you understand the world and how you go through things. And I'm trying to understand it from a logical standpoint. It's really challenging because like my brain's telling me, nope. But at the same time, like I know how this stuff works.
Yeah.
But what struck me was there was a, our friends from the Anomaly Film Festival, Anomaly Presents, or the new name of it's part of the Lunchador Podcast Network, is Behind the Studio Door. And there was a movie, this was about 2 years ago, from a family of filmmakers. Interesting enough, it is the Adams family, ADAMS.
Okay.
And there was this movie that as soon as you did your intro, it just popped into my head. And I'm going to highly recommend you take, if you're a consumer of media, which is up for debate depending on everything else here. But there was a movie called Hellbender and it was it was a very simple movie. It was made in the early days of the pandemic, but it wasn't like a bound by the pandemic aesthetic, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
But it was isolated.
It wasn't filmed on Zoom?
No, thankfully. But it was lean, and it's better for its leanness. Mm. It's better for its simplicity. It's better for its focus on story and relationships. Mm. And it's, I'll give you the rough idea. So the description is a witchy, heavy metal, coming-of-age folk horror story.
Great.
Yeah. Which immediately, like, yep, that seems right hell up this yeah. alley. Yeah. But it's basically the story of the mother and daughter and mysterious ties to witchcraft. And yeah. how do you protect people? How do you protect people from darkness? How do you revel in the weirdness and all those things? And I was like, ooh, this seems like this would be like the patron saint of this discussion was this movie. I just wanted to bring that up for people. Cool. Like, if this kind of conversation resonates with you, this might be the kind of movie, and these filmmakers are real independent family beautiful. Artists.
That's awesome.
So I highly recommend going to find that movie. It was truly excellent.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also highlights these really interesting interpretations of what it is we're even covering and talking about to begin with, right? Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned astrology, mm-hmm. you mentioned witchiness, mm-hmm. you mentioned community weaving. Weaving is the word now. community weaving, because it's a feeler word that I picked up. Yeah. But there's these words that can be interpreted in all these different ways that can feel bypassy or dissociative, mm-hmm. or, you know, anybody can come from whatever angle and have different judgments about them. Mm-hmm. So defend yourself. No, I'm kidding. but I mean, generally speaking, it's like it's how does someone approach those, like creating clarity around the use of astrology in the dance space versus like witchiness. What does that actually mean when you say that versus someone's interpretation?
I so appreciate that question. It is very, very dear to my heart. And I think it's it's so funny. I say it kind of like offhand, but I also have behind it personally a really fierce reclamation process that I've moved through with the concept of witchcraft, with the concept of astrology. And this is, you know, these are deep esoteric lineage-based systems that go back to the original people, right?
So like historically speaking.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And for me, the word witch, and another great suggestion for those out there interested in this, is a book called Waking the Witch by Pamela Grossman. But for me, witch holds a deeply radical and really, in a way, justice-oriented word. It's reclaiming of the feminine. It's reclaiming of the repressed archetype of the woman in her power, the woman who can hold community space and can heal and can use, you know, earth-based processes and intelligence to move through the world. And it's a deep ancestral practice, right? And so, you know, I've done all kinds of research on the topic, and I don't want to dive too heavily into it, but for me, there's actually a real radical nature behind it. You know, it's very justice oriented to me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And I do, Molly, did you have something?
Well, I was going to add, like, I think it connects to this idea, because, you know, we're coming back to the idea of like creative community in Rochester, but how you work with these lineages of ancestry and like these skills and ways to work with the earth and with people. I'm really inspired by the fact that it's all grounded into ancestral, like DNA, like lineage and homing, and really like finding the place in the land that you're connected to. And so that's an esoteric process, but it's also a very like human physical, you know, communal process. And it's really interesting to me because it's like, you know, especially a lot of us who are white people have a hard time with
whites, like Will Wheaton.
White people can sometimes have a hard time with that. And I'm really inspired by your process of digging into that. It's inspired me to dig into it and see like, where do I belong physically, ancestrally, and that impacts our creative process as well, right? So and our much. Community building.
I mean, it's your personal mythology. It mm-hmm. is your history in blood and bones, right? And, you know, I find that so deeply, like, to understand belonging on the ancestral level, but also on the community level. These are two axes that I think about every day. mm-hmm. It's like, how do I belong to the direct community around me? How do I take care? Right? How do I show up as a good, conscious being that is looking out for the good of myself and all as a shared effort? But also, how do I look towards the other axis, which is ancestral? But, you know, within the kind of seven generations philosophy that comes from Native North Americans, where we're looking back seven generations and forward seven generations, because we know our life here is not an isolated incident. It's not a vacuum. It's actually deeply interconnected to everything, to all of creation, right? Mm-hmm. And so, when I think about even community care and these spaces that are being held, and also the practices that we bring into these spaces, the practice of astrology, the practice of movement as catharsis, these are all ancestral practices, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this also doesn't come out of New Age spirituality. This is old stuff we're doing.
Yeah.
And if we don't know where and why, you know, where it comes from, why it was intended to, or how it was intended to be used, we're not really doing it justice. I think that's bypassing, you know, mm-hmm. I think that that's misinformed, and you know, it's dangerous, like using astrology as a typology. It's right. a caricature of itself. It's not how it was intended.
Right. Astrology memes are not it. People.
It's not it, y'all. And like kindness, if that's your access point, great, but go deeper. And for me, it's always like this insatiable curiosity of like, where is the root? Where does it come from? And why is it here in collective consciousness? And then how do we use it in a good way? How do we wield the tool, the sword, with truth and not with, you know, you use the word disassociation, right? Mm-hmm. Like bypassing. Yeah, it's really important, you know? And so when I talk about witchiness, I'm speaking directly to this like deep history that it carries as a word. Yeah.
I think I want to provide like a quick example Please. Of what I think you're talking about, which is like during the break, Chris was showing us this gimbal that he has mm-hmm. for his phone, and
so cool.
It's so cool, and the technology is getting cheaper mm-hmm. and things are getting much more accessible in terms of tools. I mean, we're in his studio and mm-hmm. it's in his house, and it's like, it's really cool to have accessibility to be able to create things yes. more than ever in a situation where 20 years ago, it would have been way more expensive, way more complicated. And you'd have to work with like an engineer that would cost way too much money to be able to work with. Not to say Chris isn't expensive.
I work for cheap.
but the idea that I'm trying to lead to is that this, like, he was showing us this gimbal and like just this little movement of it moving around, and we were all like, whoa. There's this sense of awe and wonder that comes from experiencing something tangible, mm-hmm. right? Like experiencing a piece of technology or a piece of art, or even just like the human body physically moving or hitting drums or something like that. Like there is this inherent connection I feel. And in my own kind of personal deep dive and spiritual deep dive is like, there is this inherent connection between the material and the spiritual.
Yeah.
And by spiritual, in terms of my definition, I mean just kind of like the study of the self, the getting to know of the self, you know, related to
internal stuff.
You know, it's always kind of, We always talk about it connected to the divine, and and those are powerful things to talk about, like you were saying with like astrology and archetypes and things like that. But I'm simply trying to bring it down to the person who is perhaps listening and being judgmental, and it's like, how does this relate to anything artistic? This doesn't make any sense. You're just putting a bunch of words together. It doesn't really relate to anything. You know, I catch myself having been that person in the past. Right. And so when you're talking about history and your personal lineage, that to me seems like it's connecting the material
100%
to the spiritual.
Yeah. And you know, for me, it's always like, if we're not actually taking it and doing something in the world with it that is towards a movement of evolution or healing or repair, right? It's actually not doing anything. Yeah. If I'm just using astrology to say, well, this is the why I am the way I am, right. You stop right there. Mm-hmm. Like, where's the growth?
Mercury in retrograde ruined my marriage.
It's actually not, that's not how the tool was intended to be used, right? Mm-hmm. So we actually need to understand, I come from a perspective of what's called literally evolutionary astrology, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, we're looking at this as a map that you have free will to move within. Mm-hmm. And that actually the greatest thing that you can do is take your own personal agency towards your own growth and belonging to the world, mm-hmm. being a helpful person in your community, being a helpful, you know, body in spaces that need your stand for justice. You know, it's like, yeah. If it's not doing anything in the world, it's not, it's vapid, you know?
Vapid. Yeah. What a word. Yeah. I have more I can keep going with.
Yeah,
but
continue. Okay. I'm sitting here just like watching both of you talk. I'm like, oh, that'd be awesome.
I don't want to take over, but I'm awake now.
I feel the duality of our nature, and it's really special. It's so it's harmonizing.
In the Enneagram, yeah. I think we're both sexual instinct, which is one-to-one instinct. So we're just like, great. Boom, connected.
Yeah.
But I'm really curious about, you know, this is effectively about art. It's about Rochester. Yes. It's about community and connection. And we've talked a lot about community, which is great because it's part of what you do as a community weaver.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious about how all of this translates to other creative practices. Mm-hmm. You know, are you making physical art? Yeah. Particularly if there's anything tangible, physical, that comes through. Like, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, my physical art is such a deep personal practice for me, but it's so important, and it kind of draws a circle around everything we've been talking about. And I think it starts for me with the body. Like, if I'm bound up and I'm stuck, I can't make, right? So first I have to move, right? I have to like actually listen and get curious in the morning. My morning practice is like getting curious with like, where is my body holding wisdom? That's the question. It's not where's my body holding pain or tension or blockage. That language feels very contractive to me. It's like, where's the wisdom? And it's speaking through sensation. And it might feel uncomfortable, but like, let's get to know this container that I'm functioning in with that every day, right? So that I can clear it out, so I can create space for that channel, that like flute, to be played clearly by inspiration. And then from there, it's really this process, honestly, of like attuning to myself as an individual, as part of the collective. Right, as like, what am I sensing, feeling about my experience, and then how it weaves a thread into the larger human family, a larger collective body. Right. Because that realm speaks through symbol, it speaks through image and feeling, you know, that you can pick up on almost like a weather pattern, right? You are a part of that. You are not isolated from that. And so much of my kind of artistic practice is that attunement, that's sensing into the collective language that speaks through symbol and understanding like, what is this larger pulse? What is this larger body experiencing right now? And how am I personally affected by it? And it might come out through drawing. It might come out through poetry. I really love language as symbol, right? A word, vapid. Right? Like, this is symbol. And so for me, it's like plugging into that larger web of belonging and feeling moved by it. And sometimes I just dance, you know?
Yeah. And the world of symbols, I mean, we're around it all the time, right? And it's so interesting to have you on this podcast because you bring this very different perspective. Mm. Not different than I've ever experienced. I mean, obviously you're a unique person.
I'm me.
Mm-hmm. You are you.
We are we.
But I mean, I do a lot of work in personality types and stuff. So there are other people like you that I've experienced that are living in this more archetypal world, esoteric world.
Yeah.
And so it's one lens. It's one perspective. It's one way to approach creativity and spirituality and understanding the world and understanding ourselves and things like that. So I'm personally grateful for that perspective, even if it hurts Chris's head a little bit.
Same.
Yeah. No. I've been very quiet through all of this because this, like I said, this is very outside of my, like the way I perceive the world and things. And I have no idea if this is I don't know how this question will be perceived. So please. I'm going to ask it anyways.
So
when it comes to, there's a lot of constructs that you're talking about, right? So you know, whether it be I was doing Google searches and reading things. When it, evolutionary yeah, astrology
term, I'm next
or
to Chris, so I can see the Googles happening.
Right, because I'm trying to figure things out as we're talking. I'm trying to think about the question, which so you mentioned a lot of different constructs, right? Yeah. From the astrology to, you know, the movements and, you know, global consciousness mm-hmm. and all these different things. And I don't know, the way my brain goes through things, I always dive down into root cause, right? I go into root cause. That's how I understand the world.
I'm very similar.
For me, at least this is how it struck me, and please correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're talking about all these, you're talking about, you know, some native modalities, you're talking about all these different things, generational. It seems like a lot of the things you're talking about are there's a protection of, it seems like it's protecting something that's delicate in the world today. It's protecting your connection to, you know, and you mentioned earlier, and I'll use it because you did, was the, you know, the ability for you to connect to your essential, you know, feminine nature, right? Where there's so much risk now. And it seems like there's this protection where you can practice these things underneath that. And I think that's the part that struck me right away, is that it just made me feel sad. Not that you're not embracing what you're doing and enjoying and living your best through that.
Yeah.
But I think the part that grabbed me was that these things are there because of the fundamental, you know, risks and dangers for being an active, vocal, you know, feminine person of many different persuasions in the world today.
Yeah.
That this allows that practice, but it also offers a certain protection to do that. And like I said, it just kind of made me sad.
Yeah.
Not the enjoyment, but that, and again, not to say that it's not necessary for you or anything like that. That's not what I'm trying to say. It just seems like that's part of why it's necessary for, to use that. And that part struck me.
I feel very moved by that reflection. Is there something you want
to say? I was going to ask clarity if it's like, is it sadness about the fact that we need that reclamation?
Yeah, because that's how my brain works. Like none of that stuff, none of it rings to me as something I want to dive into more, other than a understanding of like, how does this work for a person?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not something that's likely to work for me in like in any sense, but at the same time, that's how I perceive many different things in the world, from religious practices to other things. If it's something that's benefiting a person and it's not hurting others and it's having a positive effect on you and others around you and isn't detrimentally affecting others, and you're respecting others at the same time. And I'm going to use, again, a term that is not, I'm going to say I accept it, because my preference would be that everybody would be able to live their way without the rest of the constructs, because you're talking about, we've got violent emotions. We've got these things, and not violent in a bad way, but there's fury. There's justifiable anger and fury about the world and the way we're perceived and all these things. And that the constructs are necessary for those things to be portrayed within your small community and other things. That's the part, because for me, I wish there didn't have to be constructs to express those things, that we could work together and go through those things. But it, again, the necessity isn't that you could choose to remove it and still practice the same way, because this is what works for you and it feels right. And that's enough.
Yeah.
Being enough for you is enough.
Hey.
So I know it kind of jumped in with some like the way, again, the way the engineer brain works.
Yeah, but that's, I really appreciate that. And I want to say, it's funny, because as you're speaking, I'm like, you know what? We're not so different, though, my friend.
No.
And the interesting thing is, though, is that all of these frameworks that I use are like throwing a veil over the mystery.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And trying to point at it. And it's funny, because I don't worship astrology, right? Yeah. I don't believe that it's deified as a god. But I see that it can track a pattern in the human experience. And for me, it's like, I so badly want to feel like I have my fingers on the pulse of something that is alive, something that is inspiration, something that is like the pulse of the human heart, right?
Well, it also kind of like, and I'll jump in because it seems like it allows you to access that thing.
Yes.
The construct allows you to go into it because like what you said, like I fundamentally believe, like it all just seems ridiculous to me. In many ways, but if the construct allows you to engage that part of your brain, there's value in that.
Right. It's simply a catalyst and like a vantage point to look at something that I think we're looking at the same thing, right?
Sure.
But from a different angle. And I think that that's important, that there, again, is this like multidimensional nature to our experience. And I mean, God, that the sadness is real. I mean, what's so interesting in what you were speaking to is like you are speaking to what is now called the witch wound, right? That there has to be an explanation for the ways that there's this sometimes like real connection to perhaps what, this word that I have trouble with that is intuition or direct knowing from the body. You know, the ways that the feminine actually works in the world as a archetypal force that doesn't need to explain itself. But in this world, we have to like beat it to shit with these frameworks and these constructs or else no one will, I mean, it sounds crazy, right? Mm-hmm. For how we're conditioned. Mm-hmm. I really hear you. I'm really grateful for that reflection. Yeah.
Yeah, it can be really difficult to interpret these things, even for myself. I mean, Molly and I have conversations where you're trying to ask me how I'm feeling, and I'm just like, I don't typically have feeling-based frameworks to work with.
I'm fine.
I'm fine.
How are you feeling? And then he'll give me a list of like, well, this video's rendering.
I'll start saying what I'm doing.
Great.
Right? Yeah. Or if I have some sort of personality type explanation, I can lean into that. But even if it does feel, because I very much resonate with the spiritual conversation, because as much as I also resonate with being a thinker, I have done a lot of deep work, but through the thinker lens, diving into the work of Carl Jung and personality types and shadow and all of that stuff. But again, it's like, this is my lens. This is my speech. This is my way of approaching it and going through it. And, you know, what we're kind of tapping into a little bit here is like just the kind of difference in worldviews and experiences. Mm-hmm. It's like the way you look at things, the way you understand things, and ultimately how that gets imbued into art. Because like what you were speaking to a lot, Chris, was like the sadness, the frustration, the anger, a lot of what I perceive personally as the challenges in the world that people are filtering through themselves can get lost by just randomly putting it on social media versus like finding an expression for it, finding an art form for it, finding a place to put it, or not even just in terms of creating from an analytic left brain sense, but a space that like dance, being able to have a space to let it go, even if it is temporarily for a little bit, to take it off for a little while and just be a human, but not a human trying to save the world.
An animal in a body.
Yep.
Yeah. So primal.
And I really think like to bring it all back home to creativity and creative practice and community, like those are the most human ancient things. Mm-hmm. Like, I often think about the fact that we painted our hands on cave walls tens of thousands of years before we figured out agriculture. Mm-hmm. So to me, that like shows a little bit of priority in like how we exist as human beings. And like the idea of creative expression is to squeeze out, you know, like our essence somewhere into something and like say like we were here and we existed and we're together, you know, it's like, it's such a beautiful thing. And I feel like we should maybe do more episodes because we're just like talking forever.
It's completely fascinating. And I'll say, at least to finish, you know, my thought is, you know, the part that struck me and made me feel sad is the physical motion part.
Yeah.
Mm. Because, like, you know, expressive motion isn't something I think about, but, you know, in a very classically modern male aspect, like, I want those, like, those competitive motion things, which is, like, I play curling, like, that's my competitive aspect, but I miss those, that physical outlet for rage and strength, you know, which I don't express. I don't express my rage. My rage is all analytical. Now, because I was an angry youth, and now my rage is analytical. My rage is in the root cause is my rage.
Yeah.
And the detail is that it's not expressed as emotion anymore. It's expressed as, you know, not resignment, but a brutal reality.
Ugh.
And I really appreciate the discussion of, I think what I appreciate most was this is like that creative motion, the, you know, that mental motion. And I think it kind of ties together because like, this is mental motion. This is physical motion expressing all these different things.
Yeah, brain's part of our body too.
It's definitely leaving me some thought after Beautiful. In a way I was not expecting.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I very much appreciate your willingness to like dive into the uncertainty of that.
Heck yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's really great. And not to open up more loops, really, but I don't know what, okay, so we got a little bit of time, but we're kind of speaking to the masculine and feminine a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But as energies.
Yes.
And I think that's an important distinction is the energies of masculine and feminine, especially like, and this is a general critique that I'd love for you to transform is I hear a lot of diving into witchiness or diving into lineage or diving into the past hurts and transmuting that almost into a female version of masculine rage.
Oof. Oof.
And what I hear you doing is owning kind of the synthesis of both and not necessarily losing femininity in your expression in order to meet the hurt where it came from.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I'm curious about any philosophy that has come up around like maintaining a femininity in all of that weaving. There's that word again.
He's well, like, not to open up more loops, but let's ask
but
a question.
Let's open
into the primal.
I mean, if this leads into another
creative energies. Well,
no, it's
let me,
great.
Yeah,
it's good.
Let me actually. I'll speak to this in the way that I know how, and I want to.
It's our
just
podcast,
say,
by the way.
It is. I know. We can.
Like,
talk
we could go a little longer,
if
right?
We want to?
Okay.
God. Yeah, but just to be as you know as concise as possible, I just want to say up front that I do have trouble with the gendering of masculine and feminine, and I know I use that word, but I think of it in my own way as like the Shiva Shakti kind of dynamic and that they need each other. And I hear in your question, and I see this a lot, is that there's a polarization. There's like, you can stay over there and you can stay over there. My rage is over here and my softness and gentleness is over here. But they need each other, right? And the synthesis is creation.
Yeah.
The synthesis is the creative force, right? When those different energetics, those different poles can actually dance together and inform one another. The moment they are separated, something becomes ruptured in our experience, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like when I go to dance, I go to get underneath the rage because what's there is my grief. Right. Yeah. What's there is my sadness and my rage is hiding the sadness from me. And I know that they're actually bound up to each other inside of my body. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the moment I can actually let myself feel both and kindness, because sometimes it really doesn't feel safe to feel rage or grief, you know, like kindness to that. I wanted to say that earlier, like it's a whole other conversation about even feeling safe to feel things. Right. Mm-hmm. But the moment that I can actually let that energy, emotion, energy in motion, right? They say it a lot. I like it. That it actually moves something, right? The numbness in my heart that has been there since I was maybe 7 years old just started to move like a couple years ago from dance, right?
Yeah.
And I had not been able to cry until like a couple years ago, right? Mm-hmm. That to me, that's a bodily anatomical response to something that was stuck, to something that I needed to process, to digest, to feel, right? And I couldn't actually get to that without feeling my rage first, right? So these things in whatever form are bound up in each other. They're not isolated, right? And if we think we can get angry and that the grief will also go away, you know, it's like, no, they're together, you know?
And you're really speaking to this, so like, it's a process.
Yes, yeah. Totally.
It's a life process. Totally. It's like at some point in your life, you're working, you're doing things. And yeah. then suddenly you have this like wake up moment and you're like, oh, I need to heal. And it, then that becomes a whole right. thing. And it's, so it's not necessarily that like, every single human being needs to stop what they're doing and heal right now.
And
like,
I'd like
that's impractical. That's yeah. not
heal right
I,
now.
No, can I just say too, like yeah. like that? It really brings up for me, especially I have such sensitivity around this in like the healing space with other people. That the moment there's doership, the moment that it becomes a chore,
yeah.
we're no longer free. Mm-hmm. Right. And so for me, it's like, no, it's not about you have to heal. It's not about this has to be fixed. Right. It's actually like, do I want to be more free in my experience of life? Do I want my heart to be more open? Right. It's like it's for me. You're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I feel satisfied.
Yeah. Well, and that's like it's such a good place to like kind of bring it to our conversation yeah. to a close, because that really is in its essence the creative process. 100%. Like
yeah.
life as art.
Yes.
Is that. It's yeah. like really allowing all those things to come together and synthesize. So yeah. I'm just so grateful that we got to have this conversation.
Thanks, y'all. Yeah.
Thank you.
Quite for a moral of the story, yeah. take a bunch of drugs.
Hey,
that is
no.
not the moral
oh,
of the
sorry.
Story.
That's oh, not.
My moral bad. Of the That's story is your body actually bad. Has everything that you need. And hey, through hey. The creative practice, you can access that.
Yes.
And we're going to keep talking about it.
How can people reach out to you if yeah. they want to practice or
yes.
for
yes.
the things
Learn
that you...
More.
Yes. I mean, I think the easiest way is actually Instagram. You know, my Instagram, you can search my name, Tegan West. Or right now my practice is called Danu Healing and Ceremony, but that is changing. So, mm-hmm. You know, my name or Substack is great. That I talk about a lot of this kind of more esoteric stuff on Substack, and that's the Altar of Stars.
Yeah, so. And I'll add whatever is relevant yes, at the please. Time that this podcast comes out.
Great.
Everything will be in the show notes.
Thank you
so you
so
guys
much.
Can see it.
Great.
Such an honor to be here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
Tegan.
Thank you.
Do lots of drugs.
No.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network. Genderless rage.
Hey there, coffee lovers. Do you want to make your morning cup of Joe something special? Let's talk about Joe Bean Coffee, a gem right here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador. I've been a longtime fan of Joe Bean. Kathy, Dina, and the whole team are passionate about their coffee and this city, and it comes through in every cup of Joe Bean coffee that I brew at home. Joe Bean has been a part of Rochester for years, over a decade, building lasting community and a sense of belonging for everyone who loves coffee. Next time you need beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. Even better, subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy, and you'll receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule and never be without your favorite coffee. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care.